In today's culture, it's hard to figure out what to believe. I mean, it seems like there's always two sides to everything, even something so simple as that. It's like, should you do it? Should you not do it? Like, you know, is it okay to do it? Two sides to everything. When I was a kid, it was like a known fact that dairy was good for you. Now it like kills you in a week. You're not like, no dairy. Nobody can eat dairy anymore. You know, it's like, when I was a kid, you were supposed to eat dairy. You know, and sometimes things can be like, you know, two sides of it true at the same time. Like there was the whole group for a while there, like don't eat red meat. Red meat's bad. Like just eat vegetables, vegetables. And then now there's the, you know, red meat is really good for you. Eat lots of protein, lots of red meat. I like those guys. But you're like, you know, it's like, what are you supposed to believe? I did a little test this week. I like gas station hot dogs. I just like those. And so I did a little test this week. I decided, well, let's find out. I'm going to Google those. I'm going to find out, like, healthy or not healthy. So I typed in, you know, bad things about hot dogs. And, of course, you know, everything comes up. They're the worst thing ever. Nobody should eat hot dogs. Like, hot dogs are really bad for you. You know, it's like, all right, I thought about that. Then I typed in health benefits of hot dogs. And all kinds of stuff came up. I was blown away. You know, they're filled with vitamin B12, which I have no idea what that is, but apparently is like good for you. And it has this other thing, hot dogs, called thiamine. Filled with thiamine, which is good for your eyesight. 22% of the recommended daily allowance of thiamine. I read that and I said, well, I'm going to the gas station. Hot dogs. What are you supposed to believe? I mean, it seems like there's two sides to everything now. And it probably was simpler when we had these little sayings that everybody just passed around, like little wise sayings. An apple a day keeps the... Yeah, uh-huh. And then, you know, yeah, don't have to spend $1,000 and wait 6 hours in the waiting room. Just eat an apple. Penny earned is a... Yeah, penny earned is a penny saved. Little phrases like that. We're in a series. There's a whole book in the Bible of these little phrases. Little phrases that someone wrote down, put them in the Bible. And these little phrases are to help us make wise decisions. And we've been talking about it as we go along. There's a theme to it. It's not in your notes, but I'll read it to you. Proverbs are practical advice from a personal God. Their purpose is to teach people to live disciplined and successful lives, to help them do what's right. So here's the whole idea with Proverbs, and here's how they're different than fortune cookies or crystal balls or fortune tellers, horoscopes. They're different than all those things because they're connected to God. The whole idea of the Proverbs is that we would walk them out. We would the practical advice would be lived out with a personal God. It isn't like somebody wrote them down and then gave them to people and said, good luck with that. Hope it works out. Because, hey, guess what? Knowledge doesn't necessarily mean I'll make the right decision. We all knew the smartest kid in the class. And may they make the best choice. You know, you can be super book smart or Google smart, and you may not make the best decision. See, here's what wisdom is. Wisdom is knowledge, and then it's the choice I make with the knowledge is called wise. And a lot of times I know what to do, but I can't do it. I need something personal from God. So it's like if you're just like exploring being with God or something, you can read the Proverbs and you'll get something out of it because there's a lot of wisdom there. But they were designed to be lived in conjunction, blended in to having a relationship with God. So when we read something and we can't do it, we can turn to God and get the power and help that we need to do it. Now, today we're talking about a certain area of our lives that everybody goes through, and it's a perfect place to see wisdom happen. Where do I need the power? So write in your notes. Here's what we're talking about today, the big idea. Your payoff can be more valuable than your paycheck. We're talking about our jobs. Wisdom at the workplace today. And saying that the payoff can be more valuable than the paycheck. In all the work you are given, do the best you can. Work as though you're working for the Lord, not an earthly master. Remember that you receive your reward from the Lord, who will give you what he promised to his people. That seems counterintuitive today because we all sort of see our jobs as the place we get our paycheck. The reward is the money. It's like, show me the money and I'll show you the work. And the whole idea is not just to get a paycheck, is to get the biggest paycheck I can. Like work is worth it because I get paid money. I mean, that's really super simple, isn't it? That's the reward, is money. And the more money, the better. And yet Jesus has a different take on it. Here's what he said about it. It's easier for a camel to squeeze through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter God's kingdom. Now, by the way, he's not talking about heaven here. So he's not saying rich people don't get to go to heaven or anything like that. He's not talking about like what comes next. He's talking about God's kingdom, which is a mindset or an attitude. It's a way of being. It's a posture of heart. And here's what he's saying. When money is the most important thing to me, it's difficult to feel close to God. Whether I don't have enough of it and so I'm obsessed and scared, or I have so much of it that all I can think about is how I can get my so much to be even more. When money matters the most to me, when money is the most important thing to me, here's what Jesus was saying. He was saying, when money matters the most, even at the job, it'll be hard to feel like you're on the same page as God at work. It'll be hard to feel like God loves me and wants to empower me at work. It'll be hard to feel his guidance at work if money's the most important thing. Now, here's the problem. Jesus says, well, if you're super, super, rich and money matters most to you, it's going to be hard to feel God. And most of us go to work, and that's the main thing we're concerned with. And life. Now, he's not saying it's impossible. I mean, I know it might seem like it. You think about this exaggeration, like, oh, man, he's like saying it's impossible to be rich and feel God in your life because, like, camels don't get through an eye of a needle. But there's sort of a background to this that kind of shows you what Jesus was saying. He would often visit Jerusalem, which was, the big New York City of his day, big, big city. And there was a wall all around Jerusalem, and there was these gates that came into the city. And one of the gates was called the Eye of the Needle. I brought a picture of it so you can see it here. This is the Eye of the Needle Gate, actually still there. And this gate is so small that it's hard for even people to get through and just like almost, but not, impossible for a camel to get through. But here was the problem. Some merchant would come rolling into Jerusalem with his camel all loaded down with baggage and all kinds of stuff on there. And then he would scoot through this Eye of the Needle Gate and the camel couldn't get through. So he'd have to go back out and maybe take half of it off and then try to get the camel through. Still couldn't squeeze. And it wasn't until he took everything off the camel, and they actually, in history, they have stories about this, and the camel would get down on its knees and he could squeeze the camel through the gate, the Eye of the Needle Gate. Here's what Jesus is saying. It's okay to be rich. But life's hard enough, it's going to be a tight squeeze. If money matters the most to me, it's the number one priority. Now here's the good news today. What we're going to talk about today is some things that are a better payoff, even more valuable than a paycheck, and it comes from the Proverbs. So let's take a look. Right, number one in your notes, our job is our gym. Even the wise could become wiser by listening to these proverbs. They will gain understanding and learn to solve difficult problems. Amanda Palmer is a singer and songwriter, artist, and she was on a podcast being interviewed by someone, and she was talking about something that a friend said to her, and her friend said, Amanda, when you have issues, they go down to the deepest part of your soul, in the cellar of your soul, and they lift weights. I thought, yeah, I understand. The issues, they don't go away. They just go down into our souls and they get stronger and stronger and stronger. And do you know one of the best places for the issues to sort of emerge and come up into the surface so we can deal with them is at our job? I mean, if you have a problem with honesty, like if your character, like that's a problem for you, there are tons of chances to lie at work. If they come and I can deal with them there. Like if I have a problem with being patient and I'm a salesperson or I'm in customer service, how many opportunities do you get every single day to work on patience? See, when your job is your gym, it's a huge payoff because those issues that are down there, They've been lifting weights, getting stronger and stronger and stronger. They rise up to the surface and you get a chance to see them. You get a chance to see what you're dealing with and what the problems are. And jobs is one of the best places for that to occur. Is that your job? Now, let me read something to you. It says, can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? So one of the things about jobs, you think about how it shows up in everyday life and it shows up in our relationships. Do you know you can work on your marriage at your job? So here's what that looks like. Let's say, for instance, you come from a background or you brought some bad habits into your marriage, and one of the problems is faithfulness. So you're trying to figure out, you know, like how to be faithful. I'm married now, and you're at your job. And one of the things about jobs is there's a lot of flirting that goes on at jobs. And there's a lot of interaction amongst co-mingers that happen at the job, all the co-workers, you know, a lot of stuff's going on there. And if you've got an issue, man, down in your soul, because of the way you were raised or the things you saw or like in relationships that you were in, it was just like okay to flirt. And that was just like part of how you lived. That was just like an okay way for you to live. And then that starts coming up at your job because you see other people do it, or maybe someone's flirting with you. I know it's getting a little warm in here right now, but just relax. Because this is real. This is like how life works, because we all work somewhere, right? And your job is your gym. My problem is I don't see my job as my gym. I see my job as my jail. So every day I don't think I'm going to a gymnasium to work things out. I feel like I'm going to a jail. And I have to like survive that like every single day. And then at 5 o'clock I'm finally released from jail. And so all the things that like I grew in that day, like I'm more patient because I had to be patient all day long. The customer's always right with a big smile on my face, and I'm getting stronger and stronger. It's like that only happens in jail. I'm not playing that forward into my life. Because let me tell you, when the whistle blows at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock or whenever it is you get up, and I get out of jail, I'm not looking to take those things that I was able to grow in that day home. Like for me, you know, I got to listen to people all day long, and I got to talk to them and listen to people and talk to them. So I'm becoming a better listener. I'm becoming a better talker. That's happening in jail. So like when I get out of jail and I get in that car and I'm driving home and I get home and I've like had a really strong day listening and talking and, you know, giving people space. I'm not interrupting. And then when I get home, I'm just like walking in the house and like I give my permission to be grumpy because like I need some downtime now. And of course, my wife is waiting. And, you know, she wants to talk. And I've been doing great all day long, you know. And it's like, babe, I just need some downtime, just a little bit. And so she's like, okay. Well, when are we going to talk? And I'm like, in bed before we go to sleep? Or tomorrow? Sometimes it's like, because it's jail. Because the shift for me, and here's some marriage wisdom. If you're like, just going to give you this. My finish line used to be the minute I walked out of that building. And I was decompressing on my way to my car. And when I was in my car, it's like, woohoo, get out of jail. And I am on my way home. My finish line was the minute I left work. It never occurred to me that people were waiting for me at home. They want to talk to me about their day and what was going on and what was happening. And I came home and I was like, whoa, you don't understand, man. I'm on work release. I was like, I just got out of jail. I'm not ready for all this. I set my finish line 45 minutes ago. And here's what I had to learn. I learned this as a pretty young husband. I had to move my finish line. Because people were waiting for me and wanted to be with me. And I was screwing everything up because I was getting home done. And they were just getting ready to start. Like when my kids were little, like when I would hit the front door, my son was waiting with the basketball. Come on, Dad. Like he's ready to play, like now. You can't be done when you get home. When you leave the gymnasium, it's the opportunity to go, whew, I've been working out all day here. I'm working on my patience or my kindness or my honesty. And now if I move my finish line, that can show up at home, even in your marriage. You know, you have problems with faithfulness, and there's all kinds of people flirting and things going on. Here's some startling stuff. This has always been true, but I did some more research this week. The number one place that affairs start in America is at the workplace. Listen to this now. 85% of all marital affairs, I don't know why they call them extra, it's so stupid. Marital affairs, of course it's extra. God. 85% start with somebody at work. Now that's a heck of a gymnasium. It's a place to work out. Here's what the Bible says about it. It's a proverb. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Talking about boundaries. Setting boundaries. Do you know the number one place I've learned to set boundaries in my life, and now these showing up in all different areas of my life, is at the workplace. And here was the problem I had. Maybe you have this problem. Here's the problem I had. You know, before I became a Christ follower, I didn't have any boundaries, and like I didn't even try to follow my conscience. My conscience was just annoying. That's all that was. It's like, but then I started to follow Jesus, and I'm like walking with him, and I was like, oh, you know, you gave me a conscience. This is actually a good thing, you know? So then as I started to walk with Jesus and like navigate through things, I really believed, and this was for quite a while, if my conscience was clear, I was in the clear. I really believed that. And maybe you do too. And I've had to switch that years ago and realize that in some areas, my conscience can be as clear as can be. Here's how I noticed it. I can do something and sleep like a baby. And like 2 weeks later, I'm rethinking it, realizing, oh man, that was so wrong. But I had a clear conscience. See, my conscience at some point in my life got a little jacked up. And so I can't trust it all the time. But you can trust boundaries. 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 Those are boundaries that you set, regardless of your conscience. That's what that is saying. So stay back away from her. You know, here's what flirting is. Flirting is getting up really super close to it. It's like my little grandson, Lewis. Like, we watch him all the time. We just had him. He comes over to our house. And this is his favorite thing to do. And I think he does it to me especially because it's hard not for me to laugh. And so you realize I can get you to laugh. And so here's what he loves to do. There's certain things in our house that Lewis is not supposed to touch. There's boundaries there. He loves, as soon as he sees me comes home, he runs right over to the thing he's not supposed to touch. Runs right over there, and here's what he does. He runs over, and he looks at me, and he puts his fingers up, and he puts his fingers close as he can get to it without touching it, and then he starts smiling. Just as close as absolute possible without touching it. You know, there he is, just barely, you know. And he starts laughing, like, he thinks it's so funny, you know, that like he's that close to the boundary. Now, in my house, we have a steep set of stairs that go down, and we have to put a gate on there. For Lewis. And here's why. He's so little, he doesn't understand boundaries. It's like, I know what he's going to do. He's going to run over and he's going to get so close to those stairs and think it's so funny. But what if he slips and makes a mistake or he gets distracted? What if he were to slip and fall all the way to the bottom? He could be seriously injured. And I don't trust him. So we have a gate there. A boundary, because he's a baby. He doesn't understand boundaries yet. Are you a baby? Because if you're flirting, that's a boundary, and you're right next to it. Say. Now here's what the Bible says. Look at this right here. Nice day, cost simple day at church today, huh? Okay. Here it is right here. I'm going to read you some. He's talking about, this guy wrote this, and here's what he said. He kind of sarcastic. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house. Doesn't understand boundaries. Oh, I'll be okay. I'm just flirting. He's just a flirt. She's just a flirt. Remember now, we're in the gymnasium working on faithfulness in our marriage. It's a great place to do it at work because it's all over the place, man. So you don't have to be faithful. You can flirt all you want to. It's like, here's what one psychologist said. I'll write it. It'll come up behind me. If you work with someone daily, watching each other's backs, helping each other with problems of life, on top of that, you give that person a special title. You've heard that. He's my work husband. He's my work wife. It's so innocent, sweet. We're just flirting. Bullshit. I wouldn't say a romantic relationship is inevitable, but it sure is highly profitable. Do you want an affair? You want to blow up your family? You want to see your kids once a week? Don't be a safe person to flirt with. And understand the boundary, whatever your conscience says. And we're just talking about the gymnasium now. See, we're talking about marriage, and marriage is hard enough, man. You go to work, and the girl's got her hair combed, and she smells good. She's actually dressed properly. Don't look like your wife when you left. Faithfulness in marriage isn't something you're born with. You find that in the gymnasium. And one of the best places to find it is at the job. See, it doesn't have to be that way. Here's another proverb right here. Be happy with your own wife. Enjoy the woman you married while you were young. She's like a beautiful deer and a lovely fawn. I'm not sure how that's a compliment, but just keep going. Let her love satisfy you completely. Listen now. Whatever issues come up at work, those are the issues that God wants to heal. Wherever you're weak at work, that's where God wants to make you strong, and that is more valuable than a paycheck. Now, number two, our reward is our relationship. Our reward is our relationship. The Lord has determined our path. How then can anyone understand the direction of his own life? So my son and my daughter, in their backyard, they have a garden, and a duck flew in there and made his home in their garden, like in their garden box. My daughter went out there, and she was going through the stuff, and this duck flies out. And sure enough, a duck had made a home in my daughter-in-law's garden area, And I brought a picture of the duck today. I want you to see it. Now, my daughter-in-law put a duck cam in there. Is that crazy? And she's got, you can see the duck at all times on her phone, and there was the duck, and then that, and there's over there's the eggs, six eggs the duck laid, and there's the happy little story at the end, there's the ducks. And, and I'm thinking about this when she told me about that, and I was thinking, of all the crazy places, like of all the houses that duck could have went to, of all the different ones, like it totally picked the right house going to my daughter's house. Because she's like the only person that would do that. It's like, I'm like, how did that, it's like, that is the craziest thing. Like my daughter, like she's so crazy when it comes to animals. This actually happened one time. There was a pit bull loose in our neighborhood, some kind of pit bull, stray pit bull now loose in our neighborhood. I get a call from my son. He says, hey, Samantha found this pit bull in the neighborhood running around, and she's got it in our yard up on the porch, and she needs you to come over and drive him down to the Humane Society. I'm like, well, you lost me a pit bull. I drive over there, and there she is. Standing like she's got a rabbit in her arms, but it's a pit bull. And she's like on the couch, like she's here on her porch with it, petting it. And, sure enough, before I know it, we got it in the back of my car, and we're driving down the Humane Society. And I'm like, who does that kind of crazy thing? And my daughter. And obviously her crazy father-in-law did it too. And I thought about that duck. I thought of all the houses that duck could have picked. That duck picked the right house. And then I started thinking about my job. Because I was thinking, I guess in an odd sort of way, and maybe this is out there a ways for you, but in an odd sort of way, I guess you could say God trusted my daughter with a family of ducks. And so I'm thinking to myself, what if God sees my job the same way? What if God is trusting me with some people that I work with? I ask you to do something for a minute now. Just everybody close your eyes just for a second. Don't be the one person that doesn't. Just close your eyes for 1 second. Then I'm going to ask you just kind of picture where you work at. And then think about some of the people that you work with. Who are the people there that you really like? Now picture some of the people that you don't like. Try not to double up your fist. Now look up here for a minute. What if God puts you there? Because he trusts you to be with those people and to make a difference with those people. What if it wasn't an accident? What if a lot of things aren't an accident? What if they're a combination of, you know, maybe random, but also God saying, this is how I'm going to orchestrate this. That lucky duck picked the right house, or maybe God cared enough about a family of ducks to know just the right person to send them to. And maybe your life, my life, is the same, where you work at every day. And yes, there's the people you like, and yes, there's the people you don't. But maybe he's trusting you. He knows you're just the right person to work there. Antonio Stradivari, he makes those famous Stradivarius violins. You've heard about them. $5 million, $10 million, $15 million, 16th, 17th century, he made these things. And super, super expensive. And of course, like anything else, he didn't make them all himself all the way. But one thing he wouldn't relinquish is he always picked the wood. And this guy was crazy. He would actually go out into the forest and pick the tree. And then he'd paint an X on it. And he'd follow the tree all the way through the milling process. And he always made sure that wherever the X was marked, it was on the north side, that that was the part of the tree that was milled for the instrument, usually violins. And someone asked him one time, said, what, are you superstitious? Or why do you always use the north side? And this is what he said. He said, I learned a long time ago that the north side of the tree is the side that the winds beat against and the rains hit and the snow hits. It takes the most abuse, but it's the best wood. It's the wood that produces the greatest tone for my violins. And maybe God feels the same way about us. He's like, maybe there's people at our jobs that drive us absolutely crazy. And you might be saying, you know, that duck's the stupidest story I ever heard in my life. You know, you don't know the mean people I work with. I understand the problem. But what if there's a tone being created in you? And God's trusting you. Now, the last thing is just a scripture I want to read to you. Good people who don't stand strong against evil are like springs that have been polluted or pools that have been turned dirty and muddy. So here's the idea here, and I just want to toss it out before we get done today. We all face stuff at work that have to do with ethics and morals. It's very, very tricky to know what we should do and what we shouldn't do, especially if you're a Christ follower. It's like, do I put that out there? I don't want people to think I'm religious. Like, but I see things happening. Should I take a stand? I like what this guy said. My son and I read this book, Counterculture, David Platt. And he's talking about this whole thing. I'm going to read a little bit, and then the last part will come up. It says, when people hear the term freedom of worship, they often envision the freedom of men, women, and children to gather together in a church building, synagogue, or mosque, or other place for corporate worship. The picture may also extend to the home, where families have the freedom to pray or not pray at mealtimes, before bed, or other times during the day. But even so, all this is private, a religious freedom limited to what happens when someone is alone or in a specific gathering or a physical location or with their family. What this label fails to acknowledge is that those who gather for worship in a private setting then scatter to live their beliefs in the public square. As men and women and children live, study, work, and play in every sector of society, they perform duties and make decisions in alignment with their convictions. And that is tricky at the workplace. Because we're not supposed to show up with our relationship with God at work. I understand that's like the rule, right? But like, how do you leave your best friend at home? Like, how do you not have Jesus that lives inside you? And now I'm talking to the Christ followers for a second. Like, how do you do that? You see stuff happening. Like, at some point, we have to learn how to navigate it. You just can't say, that's just not okay, I'm not doing that. You have to learn how to navigate it, or opportunities pass by. Like, when you follow Jesus, it isn't just in this room. It isn't just at home. I mean, being with Jesus is everywhere. It's practical wisdom lived out with a personal God. And like, when I don't show up at work, it's like a muddy, like, pool of water that everybody has to drink out of, and I'm the one that can help get it clean. One quick story, my buddy that I worked with was a big guy, and big guy. I mean, you know, the kind of person people call fat. This guy was, he's big. He's a buddy of mine, and we're all down at the a training session, and we were in line at lunch, and everybody was there, and there was this guy up front, and we're all in line, and my buddy Scott's behind me, and the guy in front turns around and says super, super loud, "Good thing Scott's not in the front, or none of the rest of us would even get any food." And it's like, and I've been around locker rooms, man, and I've been in stuff. I mean, I know how guys can be, you know, junior high guys that are like 50, but I mean, I understand the problem. But I mean, I said, but this was over the top, man. This was a low blow. I turned around, Scott's face was bright red. He was embarrassed. And it got really quiet. Nobody said anything, including me. I wish I had. I thought about it for days. I wanted to say to him so bad, "Shut up! Get your food and get out of the way." But I didn't. Wasn't sure if it was my place and should I do it, and so I just didn't do anything. And that's not a big deal. That wasn't going to change the world, but it was going to do something in my world. That's all we're talking about today, man. The workplace, the relationships there, they're the reward.